Good morning. That was like perfect timing. In the 9 o'clock, we were a little slower. Anyway, I'm Rusty. This is my wife, Becky, and I'm pastor here at New Hope, and I'm really glad you're with us, whether you're here in person or online. We have been doing this series together. This is the third week. It feels like not the 30th, but the third week. I'm saying that because we've kind of joked about our different ways that we approach things, and it's been funny, and really it's been good to do this together.
I need to just say this. As he just described, we have different ways of approaching the material and thinking through things and speaking, and we decided fairly early on that I was kind of more like a shotgun, you know, that just is hitting tons of targets. Like, I'm just like all over the place, I'm hitting tons of targets. And I was kind of like okay with that because he compared me with Vin Diesel and, yeah.
And he always uses a shotgun in the, was that like they've done 400 of these Furious movies? Yeah. He always uses a shotgun.
We just finished that whole series. But then this morning I thought of this. The analogy for him is Mark Wahlberg in Shooter. Just like laser focused on the target. Yeah, so there's that.
The other aspect of it, and you're going to pick that up today, is that Becky is, she's a little bit more of a feeler than I am.
Huh.
I did a test one time, and I identified with three emotions. The good news is they rhyme, so I remember mad, sad, and glad. Becky identified, it was a list of 100 emotions, and she...
Just you identified. Degrees.
She identified with 90 of them. I'm not. This is not an exaggeration. It was like, how do you live this way?
But, I don't know. How do you live with me this way?
One of the things we've learned, like we do this Bible study prayer night every Monday, and I learn more from the Bible with other people than just by myself. You can read it and you can learn things, of course. But there's something about being with others and their angle of approach and kind of how it fits with them. And I personally, it's been a lot of work, but I've really loved us being able to do this together, and we're still learning stuff. And I think today you're going to see this. What we're doing is we're doing a series going through the life of Peter. Peter was one of Jesus' best friends, one of his disciples. And we're fortunate that it's recorded a lot about Peter's life. You know, we're used to an age where you spin things to look good. That's what resumes are for. What we see with Peter's life is that we see the things that he did that were amazing and courageous, and we see the really remarkable failures and where he blows it. And there's something about that that, to me, it's inspiring. It gives me a lot of confidence in the Bible because it doesn't just tell you the good stuff. So in Peter's life, we've been looking at this. We have one more week after this, but we looked at the first when Jesus asked Peter to follow him. What we discover is that Jesus accepts us, right, and he looks for us right where we are. You know, that last song we just did is a perfect picture. It's not, you know, get your life straightened up and then I might talk to you. It's, I know you. I know everything about you. Right now, he knows every secret you and I have, and he still wants a relationship with us. We see that with Peter. So he accepts us as we are, but he's not content with us to stay that way. And so once we begin a relationship with him, then he's going to help us change from the inside out because he has intentions for our life. He knows purpose that you and I have been built for. And what he's looking for is not perfection or faking perfection, but this making progress along the way. And we see that played out in Peter's life. And then today we're looking at this idea of failure. Peter had some monster fails. It'd be easy to point at him and say, what a loser. And then we go home and look in the mirror and realize we're cut from the same cloth. We're very much like him. So I think you're going to find some things here that are really helpful. We're going to paint, we're taking four episodes of Jesus' life in the last days while he was here and four scenes. And I think you're going to see in that something that is incredibly real, but also very hopeful too.
So last week I spent a good bit of time talking about humility. That's something that God is wanting to build in our lives once we become a follower. And I talked about it a lot because Jesus spent a lot of time trying to get through to his disciples on this topic. We looked at two specific stories of the disciples fighting over some form of who is greater. It's what I like to refer to as the theme song of our lives, which is "So Anyway, Back to Me," which is this statement perfectly articulated by my middle school daughter many, many years ago. Jesus' response to this constant battle was and always is the same. He would tell them and tells us, be last, serve, be a slave, give, serve. So I'm picking up on this theme in our first scene today, which is at the Last Supper. It's the last meal that Jesus will have with his disciples before he is put to death. Now, he's been telling them what is true about humility for 3 years, and now in a stunning, actually shocking way, he is going to show them what he means. So this is from John 13. It was just before the Passover feast. Jesus knew that the time had come for him to leave this world and to go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he now showed them the full extent of his love. If you have notes, I would say circle, show them. He's told them, and now he is getting ready to show them. And John is so eloquent in his writing, recording, because he was there, recording every detail and movement of the next scene. The evening meal was being served. So Jesus got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and he wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin, and he began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. This is mind-blowing. This was and is mind-blowing. Washing feet was reserved for the most menial servant or slave. Filthy feet were a given. It was a part of life. Dirty roads and sandals and lots of walking. So, and at this supper, they were eating semi-reclined around a table, and so it was a necessity to deal with this, but no servant is dealing with it, and the disciples are not. And to say this was beneath their, dignity was an understatement. And in that moment, Jesus stepped in. And then he came to Simon Peter, who said to him, Lord, are you going to wash my feet? And Jesus replied, you do not realize now what I am doing, but later you will understand. No, said Peter, you shall never wash my feet. And following that was a discussion about why this needed to happen. And when Jesus had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. Do you understand what I have done for you? He asked them. You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is true. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set an example that you should do as I have done for you. I would circle do. Jesus tells and shows how to live in love as his humble followers. And he says, now do it. And this is so others can know him and they can see by our lives. A new commandment, he says, I give you, love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. And I always thought this was kind of interesting that Jesus called this a new command. To love God and love others is all over the Old Testament. So what is this about? I wonder if what made this new is that comes from the example, the mind-blowing example that he has just showed them, washing their feet, telling them to wash one another's feet, serve each other, do as I have done. This is how you will love one another, and this is how people will know. People that don't know Jesus, they see this kind of love and service and humility. This is how they know what it means to follow him. Simon Peter asked him, Lord, where are you going? And Jesus replied, where I'm going, you cannot follow now, but you will follow me later. And Peter asked, Lord, why can't I follow you? I will lay my life down for you. And then Jesus answered, will you really lay your life down for me? I tell you the truth. Before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times. So in this moment, face to face with Peter, Jesus predicts that Peter will completely disown him three times, completely fail him. And I think it's really interesting that in that moment, he links that to the sound of a rooster. And this is a sound that Peter will hear every day for the rest of his life, many times a day. He will hear a rooster crow that is linked with Jesus said, you're going to deny me. And what in the world is he going to do with that? In the next scene, we're going to move to the Garden of Gethsemane. And Jesus is continuing to show them from that John 13 passage I read. He's continuing to show them the full extent of his love. And he is showing, by example, how he wants them to live and how he wants them to love. And what he gets ready to do here is almost as shocking as him washing the feet of his friends. In an extraordinary act of vulnerability, Jesus, the Son of God, asks for their help. He asks them to be there for him. In Mark 14, we're in the garden. They went to a place called Gethsemane, and Jesus said to his disciples, sit here while I pray. And he took Peter, James, and John along with him, and he began to be deeply distressed and troubled. My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death, he said to them. Stay here and keep watch. Be there for me. Help me get through. I am overwhelmed. How many times have we felt that way? He gets us. Going a little farther, he fell to the ground and he prayed that if possible, the hour might pass from him. Abba, Father, he said, everything is possible for you. Take this cup from me, yet not what I will, but your will be done. Abba, Father, means daddy in Aramaic. And he is pouring out his heart and his pain to his father. And he's doing it with open hands. His heart and his pain here, Father, not my will, but yours. The cup that he is talking about is not his death on the cross. There were many people that died then and now, martyrs that die terrible deaths. The cup he is referring to is something very different than that. It was that he, the holy, perfect God, was going to take on every single sinful thought, motive, and action of all people, all humanity, for all of time. He was taking that on. Then he returned to his disciples and he found them sleeping. Simon, he said to Peter, are you asleep? Could you not keep watch for 1 hour? Watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the body is weak. And once more he went away and he prayed the same thing. And when he came back again, he found them sleeping because their eyes were heavy and they did not know what to say to him. You think? A small group I was leading one time of women, we were talking about this, and I said, how many of you, if you had asked your friends to be there for you and they utterly failed you, would have asked a second time? And this sweet woman in my group said, I would have never asked the first time. And I was like, that's super telling, because I knew her story. I knew how she was raised. Of course, she would not ask the first time. But Jesus did the first, second, and third. It's astounding. Returning the third time, he said to them, "Are you still sleeping and resting? Enough, the hour has come. Look, the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us go. Here's my betrayer." When Jesus asks for help, Peter utterly fails him three times. His response when they fail, when they don't come through, is intriguing to me. First of all, he's not silent. Like, he doesn't pretend like this is not happening. I love it. It's so, like, functional. You know, he doesn't pretend. And he does honestly address that he is hurt and disappointed. He doesn't go on and on about it, but they know. Secondly, amazingly, what Jesus doesn't do is demand, get derailed, or ditch Peter. I think the example to us in this is amazing. So there is no fist or demand in expressing his need and desire for Peter to be there for him. Demand looks like a fist that can be like underneath, or it can be out there overtly. Come through for me or else. And by the way, it needs to look like this. And that person, that moment, that can be angry and ugly, or it can be very sweet. You all know that mother. You know, if you don't come through this way, you will pay. It might be with a smile, but you will pay. Peter's failure also didn't cause Jesus to derail. He didn't respond with some kind of emotional meltdown to try and force or manipulate or guilt Peter into coming through. And when Peter failed, even the third time, he didn't ditch Peter. He wasn't done with him, which could have been like a silent ghosting, you know, walk away, or a very loud, dramatic rant. Think Facebook. What Jesus offers us in how he relates here is both strength and vulnerability. It's a vulnerability that is not dependent on their response to him. Amazing. So Jesus asked, and it would have been comforting for him if they had responded well. But when they disappoint him, he ultimately gets what he needs from his Abba Father. And he doesn't make them pay. He acknowledges his disappointment, but he digs deeper with this Abba Father. Acknowledge it, don't make them pay, go deeper with the Father. I've been thinking about hurt and disappointment since I started this series. I've thought about where I felt it, where people haven't come through for me even recently. And the Holy Spirit has also given me plenty of data about where I have disappointed others. Some of these I know, many of them I'm unaware of for any number of reasons. Sometimes people in my life don't know that I have a need or desire, because in my demand, I think they should just know. I think they should be so tuned into me, so tapped into all about I, me, mine, you know, that they just know. And Rusty had to pay a price. We've been married 43 years, but he had to pay a price in our marriage for too many years. With my fist kind of under the table, and it was figure me out, step up and do it right, or you will face my crushing disappointment, and I'll derail. And guess what? It'll be your fault, because you should have known, and you should have come through. And I'm sorry. This is not what Jesus did. What he did was so compelling. He was vulnerable, and he asked. He was disappointed, but he released them, and he stayed in it with them. He went to his Father, who was always with him, who knew him, who got him, and who was there for him. It's a good model for us. In our relationships this side of heaven, we will disappoint, and we will be disappointed. Of course I will fail you, and you will fail me. But we also need to realize I cannot be your Jesus, and you can't be mine. We weren't designed for that. We can't do that. So you can try to make me do that, and I can get spun up with you, and we can do that and cycle around and be a whole codependent mess. That's fun. But you will never get what you really want. It's not what you were designed for. Live vulnerably with open hands. Work to love well. And when you blow it, like Ephesians 4:32, be kind to one another. Tender-hearted. Live with a tender, vulnerable heart. Forgive one another just as Christ forgave you. Recognize that others cannot ultimately fill the hole in your gut. They weren't designed to. So bear with them as they bear with you. I love bearing with you. I love this whole concept. When Christmas, I gave everybody little bears because they had to bear with me through a season that was not fun for them or me. Bear with each other, Colossians 3:13, and forgive one another if any of you has a grievance against someone. Forgive as the Lord forgave you, just as we've seen, as we've talked about in that model. He is our model. So after the epic fail of Peter and the disciples not being there for him as he suffers and prays in the garden, the scene moves to a courtyard outside of where Jesus has just been arrested. In Luke 22. Then seizing him, they led him away and took him into the house of the high priest. Peter followed at a distance. But when they had kindled a fire in the middle of the courtyard and had sat down together, Peter sat down with them. A servant saw him seated there in the firelight. She looked closely at him. This man was with him. But he denied it. Woman, I don't even know him, he said. A little later, someone else saw him and said, you also are one of them. Man, I am not, Peter replied. And about an hour later, another asserted, certainly this fellow was with him, for he is a Galilean. And Peter replied, man, I don't know what you're talking about. And just as he was speaking, the rooster crowed. There it was. There was the sound. The sound Jesus had coupled with Peter's betrayal. And I wonder if before he heard that sound, if he was ever really cognizant of what he was doing. There was a denial. My guess is that he didn't. Perhaps it just felt like survival, you know, what he was doing, not betrayal. And then the rooster and his vow, I will never leave you, Jesus. And Jesus' prediction, it all came back to him in that moment. And Jesus turned and looked at him, looked straight at Peter. And I love it that this is recorded in the Bible. Luke recorded this because Peter told him that's the only way he would have known. And this is devastating. In this moment, Jesus looks straight at Peter's face. And Peter realizes that Jesus fully knows his brokenness, his failure, and his shame. He has been seen and known. Jesus did not spare Peter that moment of seeing his face. And I wonder if Peter had not looked at Jesus' face, if maybe Peter would have thought like we sometimes do. Well, it really wasn't that bad. Or sure, he understands. We all make mistakes, you know, or maybe Jesus didn't even really know because he was all wrapped up in all that. So maybe, you know, he just didn't know, but Jesus did know. The Lord turned and looked straight at Peter. And then Peter remembered the word the Lord had spoken to him. Before the rooster crows today, you will disown me three times. And he went outside and he wept bitterly. All the failure and shame from what he had done just came crashing down on him, and he lost it. What were those tears about? There's a lot of kind of tears. Was he sorry, or was he more like sorry he got caught? Were the tears like abusers who say they're sorry but have no genuine brokenness or recognition of their harm? They don't care, no desire for repentance? Or was it self-pity? Was it self-contempt? I'm such a screw-up. Was it groveling? What was the state of his heart? And what should be the state of our heart when we fail God and we hurt others? Jesus had loved him. Jesus had called him to follow and believed him in and had cast a vision for his life. And what will happen to that vision now? What will happen?
Peter was crushed. You read about him and you find out he had he was definitely a feeler in a lot of ways. He was the one that would always speak out. If there was ever a silence, he filled it. And a lot of times he genuinely felt certain ways, like, I'll never leave you, Jesus. Even if the rest of these guys do, yeah, I won't. And when the rooster crows, Peter realizes, I've been found out, and he's failed. And Jesus is now arrested. He's going to go through that evening and the next early morning through a series of orchestrated events to kind of document why he's being executed. It's a religious deal. It's a political deal. None of it's right, but it's all done for expediency. Jesus is sentenced wrongly to death. He's crucified in a horrible way outside the city. And he's dead, certified dead. It's getting close to the sunset, so they have to take Jesus' body quickly. There's a tomb that's been donated, so they put him in the tomb, and knowing that they'll finish the burial after the Sabbath. So this is Friday evening. Early Sunday morning before daylight, some women show up at the tomb, and they're ready to finish the burial. They want at least the one they'd followed to have a good final goodbye. And they get there, and the stone's moved away. The tomb's empty, and no one's expecting this. Immediately, they run and find Peter and John. Peter runs back. He gets in there. As soon as he walks in the tomb, he sees the cloth that Jesus had been wrapped in hurriedly, and he realizes, Jesus said, I'm going to be arrested, I'm going to be crucified, I'm going to die, but I will be raised again. And immediately they realized, I guess he was telling the truth. Now, they're scared to death, though. I mean, the ones that wanted Jesus killed are out to get the disciples, so they've been in hiding. Only a handful of people knew where they were. This is Sunday morning when Peter realizes this. There are a few other things that happen, but Peter goes to the rest of the disciples. They're in a locked room, and that evening, Jesus appears. He's got a new body. He's able to do things that one day we'll be able to, but Jesus did this. He showed up in there, and they all see him. They get the record. This is him. This is not a hallucination. It's not a figment of our imagination. This is the real deal. And it's blowing everybody's mind. At that point, Peter realizes he's forgiven. He had blown it utterly, but then Jesus comes back, and you know, Peter understands this idea of forgiveness. 8 days later, Jesus appears again. This time he appears, and some of you are familiar with the story of a guy named Thomas. We have this phrase, doubting Thomas. Well, Thomas wasn't there that first time, but 8 days later, Thomas is there. Jesus shows up, and they're utterly convinced that Jesus really did die, and he is now resurrected. But what are they going to do? They're wanted. They're hunted. So Peter gets with the group and says, look, there's one thing we know how to do, and that's fish. So he and a group of them go back to Sea of Galilee. They go back to Capernaum, and they're going to go back and start their fishing business. You know, this is all they know. This is really what guys tend to do. I'm going to go with what I know. And so they go back to Galilee. They're fishing, starting their business back up. One day they've been fishing all day and night and caught nothing. And as they're getting near the shore, there's a guy on the shore that yells to him, says, "How you doing?" They say, "Well, we squat. Hey, we got nothing." He goes, "Throw the net over on the right side of your boat." And for whatever reason, they did. And the moment they did, the nets are full and they're bursting. And then immediately Peter remembers, 3 years ago, this is exactly what happened when Jesus asked me to be his disciple. Jesus had asked them to move the boat out. He could speak from it. Then they got this amazing catch. Peter, Jesus is masterful at this. He's doing something in time and space that reminds Peter of exactly what. Peter jumps out of the boat, takes off to shore to see Jesus. They're excited about the fact that Jesus is still around, but all of them knew they failed. And so what's he going to do with them? You know, you and I know what that's like. Someone may forgive you, but they don't want to have anything to do with you anymore. Yeah, I forgive you. Now, you're not on my friend list anymore. You're not coming to my birthday parties. I'm not coming to yours. Christmas is gone. I mean, this is the world we live in. And Peter's probably figuring the same thing. Jesus has forgiven me, but I failed him, so I am completely damaged goods. There's a difference between being forgiven and being restored. And we're going to look at that next week. Because some of us live, we carry this baggage from our past. And on our foreheads, either we have it or someone else has put it there for us. We have an F for I'm a failure, or L for a loser. Oh yeah, I've forgiven you, but you're more than worthless, or you're less than worthless. Some of us carry that a lot. And I want to tell you right now, God treats us in a way that is different than others treat us. And we're going to look at that as we finish up the series next week. What does it mean? Is it possible for my life to be restored, not just forgiven, not just okay, but actually back on a track where the vision that God has, the purpose that God has for me can still continue? Is it possible? We're going to see next week. Why don't we pray together? God, again, thank you that we have the record, and we're grateful for Peter's honesty and his humility and us being able to see exactly what his life was like, and more than that, seeing what you're like. You're a God that forgives. There was a high price paid for our forgiveness, but it's forgiveness so that we can be part of a purpose you have for us. And I pray for anyone that's here, anyone watching, that has somehow relegated themselves to, maybe God's forgiven me, but he doesn't want to have anything to do with me. He wouldn't want to be seen with me in public. I pray that there would be a much different story that they and we would be open to. You're a God who heals, a God that has big plans for us. And the only way that that would ever be stopped is if we're unwilling to turn and to follow. Please speak to us. Help us to listen in Christ's name. Amen.